Hello, I'm Eric.
Hi, I'm Sydney.
This is Hallmark Mysteries.
And more.
Hello, Sydney.
Hey, Eric. Happy weekend.
Happy weekend to you too. I'm excited to talk to Joel and Margot.
Yeah,
today.
Me too. This was great writing.
It is. So for all of our listeners, we are very fortunate to talk to, I apologize if I get his name wrong, but Joel Dovev and Margot Froley, who are the writers of The Cases of Mystery Lane. So this is going to be, I think, really interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Part of it is they're like totally fresh faces who haven't ever been on Hallmark before.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that journey came along.
Definitely. And I like this fresh group of writers here. I mean, it really showed in the movie that it wasn't like your normal writer situation.
Now that totally, I agree with you. You just made me think of another question. I'm gonna have to sneak in there.
Oh man, so you better tell me.
I know. No, I'm gonna have it be a surprise for you too.
So, okay.
Okay. But what are we going to be enjoying while the interview takes place? Something very appropriate, I've heard.
You know, I am scaling it back on the fancy with our cocktails, and I am just having a bottled beer, very Birdie Case. I'm having a Pacifico. You're having a Heineken. We should say we're both over the age of 21, so we can enjoy these.
I enjoy my Dutch Heritage Heineken beers.
Mm-hmm. And I am having, for Alden Case, the jalapeno popper. I made some jalapeno poppers because we know he enjoyed those at, I think it was the Side Saddle.
When he asked to trying to negotiate for his life. How about some beers and jalapenos?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what?
That's a great combination.
I have a feeling, Sydney, you would have been like right there with all the Windex and the Tide Pods about to kill him and go, wait a minute. Okay, let's sit down over there and enjoy those jalapeno poppers and a beer.
You are right.
Forget killing you, Alden. That's a better idea.
I think I would have even, like, before I got to the tying him up in a chair, and I would have just said, let's mosey on down to the Side Saddle and enjoy some libations and talk this through.
Let's figure out how to put this behind us over some jalapeno poppers. I would have
to
get, I love jalapeno poppers, but I'd also have to get some cheese sticks. I like those mozzarella cheese sticks too.
You know, I bet that place has them. That place probably has all the good things, the stuffed potato skins,
All right. Okay. So now that we have everyone hungry, what do you say we get on with the interview?
Let's do it.
Okay. We're really excited. We have the writers of The Cases of Mystery Lane with us, Margot Froley and Joel Dovev. I hope I got that right, Joel.
Hi, hi, hi.
You did great.
All right. Fantastic.
Okay. I just want to mention that we already did the opener, but for our, usually we do like a cocktail or something, but today we're just doing a beer in honor of Birdie. And jalapeno poppers in honor of Alden.
I'm so proud.
That's amazing.
Because they deserve that.
So in case you guys threaten us and we decide to negotiate with some jalapeno poppers and beer, we're all set.
Enough, that's what Hallmark paid us in, jalapeno poppers.
It's a really easy
one. We requested that. We requested that.
It's the TGI Fridays of contracts.
Yeah.
Oh my God. These are the TGI Friday jalapeno poppers that they sell at the grocery store. So awesome. Okay. Well, so you guys are both new writers for Hallmark and new for us Hallmark fans. Can you share a little bit about your backgrounds and what made you start writing for TV and where you came from?
Oh boy, I'm trying to get the short, the 30 second version. We've both been writing for TV on and off on our own. I come from kind of the darker drama side of storytelling. So I've written a couple of like Lifetime Rip from the Headlines movies.
Okay.
And then Joel has more of a comedy background. And so when we write together, it's kind of a smush of the two.
Yeah.
And we also both work in true crime. So we spend a lot of our week in Murderville. And so to do something lighter is really it's a palate cleanser. It's a really nice refresh of, less autopsy photos, more happy marriages.
yeah, definitely. That's really interesting, though, when you say that it's like, dark murder and then comedy. Totally see it for Mystery Lane.
Yeah, my background, I was in another life, I was a stand-up comic, and and we both write together, but we also write separately. So like individually, I write comedies, and separately, Margot writes dramas, but together we found this really fun kind of hybrid of both.
That's great.
Gold digger killer, right?
For Margot? Yeah. Gold digger killer, and then most recently Let's Get Physical, which was fun because that got to be a little bit more comedic as well. And that was like such a weird true crime story that it just could not be funny. It was a town Zumba instructor turned out to be the local prostitute. And it was a true story, and it was just too
weird. Wait, what?
Yeah. Literally true story, fascinating case, but yeah. Really busy prostitute in a very small town in Maine.
Wow.
Was also moonlighting as the local Zumba instructor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's Get Physical was a very fun Lifetime movie that Jenna Dewan really nailed we turned it into pole dancing. And so she brought that to the table, she was so good in it. But the cases was just like more humor, more fun. You can have fun in the mystery world as well.
Okay, so speaking of the mystery world, so what is it that draws you guys to this genre of writing? I guess more you, Margot. What is it that makes you so excited? Are there like other mysteries that inspire you guys? Like watch Murder, She Wrote, growing up and all that, or what got you into murder or mystery in general?
Yes, all of that. I love Murder, She Wrote. It's me who loves Murder, She Wrote. I wrote. Okay. So the theme song doesn't have words, but I wrote my own words to the theme song of Murder, She Wrote. I'm not going to sing to you, but...
maybe we need to Instagram that at some
point. At some point. Yeah. We went to a wedding. I'm from Boston originally, much like the cases. And we went to... My brother's wedding was a few years ago, and I made Margot drive up to Maine with me so we could stay at the Cabot Cove Cottages.
Because there is no Cabot Cove, but some smart person in Maine... thought to capitalize at least. Yeah.
And so also I'm a really big Columbo fan. And okay. What I really love, Columbo's very different, right? Because Columbo at the beginning, who killed who and why, and the mystery is Columbo figuring out how to prove it. But one of the fun things about Columbo that I love is the like kind of neurotic, messy detective. And we live in Los Angeles. And it's really fun to see Los Angeles back in the 60s. And, Columbo is kind of like the pilot of Columbo. I don't know if a lot of people know this, was directed by Steven Spielberg and written by Stephen Bochco. So it like already started out with this like incredible pedigree. And we're just really big fans of the genre.
Well, you do drop the Columbo a little throughout Columbo moment.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay.
That's not an accident.
But it was also, when we were writing the cases, we kept on trying to find more things like it to watch, and we were having a hard time. So it was kind of interesting we just kept watching more Murder, She Wrote, and like, thank God there's 12 seasons of it. But we were just like, there's not a lot of things that have a good mystery and great characters. Cause we got TV got so heavy into procedural, but characters were always secondary. You can see in Hallmark Mysteries, it's like Monk and Psych. It's like you can kind of just hang out in that world for a while. And that became the stuff more and more that we were drawn to.
So how is writing as a couple? Do you set time aside to write together, or do ideas just pop up all day long and you kind of are working all day long?
All of it. I mean, we have a 6-year-old, so like we have to reserve time, because if we don't, it's really hard. I mean, this is parents everywhere, right? Especially since COVID, like finding that we have to plan it, we put it in our calendar, but also like you know, like we're making macaroni and cheese, the dog's throwing up, the kid's throwing a tantrum, and you're like, I got a great idea. This is what should happen when she does this. And so it's this constant process, but it's always super fun.
There's a line in the movie where Alden lists all the jobs he's had. And that was something we had worked on during the day. And there was something we had it cracked that we're like, we put a placeholder in of like, it's something like this. We'll come back to it tomorrow. And it was like, we were like going to bed and Joel woke me up of like, cheesemonger.
Yeah.
Middle of the night, cheesemonger.
I just screamed, cheesemonger.
And I just go, yeah, that's it. And then just go back. And exactly it was like, yeah. That's good fix. But I mean, we did a draft of the cases when we were flying back east to see Joel's to see the family at Christmas time, at Hanukkah time. And our daughter had just broken her collarbone and we'd spent all day in the emergency room. We were trying to get on a plane and we had a draft due and we had like 6 hours on the airplane. And it was amazing. We got so much done and we just hunkered in and we gave our kid the iPad and just like, you know, got a whole, you know, half the draft done. So those moments are beautiful when they can happen.
So you guys are flying cross country, just brainstorming, writing away?
Yeah, we had a draft. This is this Christmas. We were working on a draft for Hallmark and we had 10 days or 2 weeks and like, that we were planning on doing it during the week before we flew, but that week our daughter had RSV, pink eye, and then Friday she broke her collarbone. Mm-hmm. And so
and I got pink eye that week too. Yeah.
I was intentionally leaving that one out. Yeah, but
hard to type with pink eye.
Yeah. And so we were half the week that we planned to write, we were in and out of doctor visits, emergency rooms. And so we were like, all right, we have like a nice 6 hour chunk. And so we did a lot of work. You know, when you have the time, it's great, but when you have a certain window, you can get a lot done.
And yeah.
Did you have people in the row like ahead of you, like turning around going, oh, that's a great idea, and laughing as you guys were chit-chatting?
No, we tried to be a little under the radar. I mean, it was, I don't even remember. It's such a blur because you're just like in the zone, you're locked in. When our daughter was being quiet, it's golden time. So you just do nothing to like interrupt that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to eavesdrop on planes more often.
Yeah, you should.
This was a very, you know, God bless Hallmark. They make a lot of movies every year and we had a slot and we needed to make the slot basically to get this film. So we wrote this thing. It started with a pilot and we basically adapted our pilot into the movie length. And that was the month of November. And then we had notes and a second draft in like 2 weeks in December, because they were still casting it in December. And then we had one more pass at the top of January. At which point I think we had our cast locked in and they were shooting this thing by the end of January and it just aired in March. So it was just an amazing, amazing dance to kind of jump into the machine because it is a well-oiled machine. So we just kind of dropped in and tried not to mess it up.
So we talked to John Christian Plummer about Mystery 101 and his first one. Well, I think it's Sydney. Didn't he have 3 days to do the first?
He had to do a rewrite.
He had the first one and it was 3 days. So that was crazy.
Yeah, it's
Hallmark timeline.
Get
on board.
They don't work around their schedule. We work around their schedule. And it was fun. It was really, really fun.
Okay. All right. So obviously, I assume this was a big deal in the household and you're probably your extended family and all that. Tell us a little bit about your watch party you had when it premiered last week.
So we had some friends come over. We are friends with a lot of other television writers. So we had a friend who has another show on a major network who...
That airs that night. Yeah, so we were like competing actually with her show.
And she is on one of the big three networks and she loved it. We had my all of our families on the East Coast. So they were, most of them, there was a party in San Francisco. My mom was like live texting everybody. And there's like a little like nuggets from like where I grew up. Like the community college that they go to is named after the lake in the town that I grew up. And she loved that. And then there was a couple of things that weren't coincidences. that were total coincidences that I hadn't, like, Officer Newton. My mom lives in Newton, Massachusetts, oh, yeah. But that was an accident. That was like, she found that to be so incredible and like loved that. Like, I was like, yeah, it was totally on purpose, but it wasn't. I don't even know if we named that person. So
yeah, we had some Easter eggs for the family throughout, which was fun.
Is Officer Newton Officer air quotes?
Yeah. Okay. He was written as Officer air quotes, and I think we just had to give him a name.
We were like, he's going to need an actual name at some point. Yeah.
Okay.
But he was somebody we wrote as like, this could be funny. And I think it's Matt Hamilton. That actor, he just was hilarious. Right. We're like, should we be so lucky? It's like, well, he has to come back. We have to do more of that. So I think we stumbled into some recurring characters because everybody was just kind of blew us out of the water.
Did you guys didn't see it before it aired, or did you?
We saw a cut of it a few weeks ago. It was a little different than what aired. But we saw it was like 95% the same. Yeah.
So you felt pretty confident that they nailed it then when you had your view, when you had all the friends come over and the other people. So you didn't expect it to be like, editor.
No, we had some baseline. I mean, I think the kind of, I don't know that he's gotten enough shout outs, but I think the director, Mike Roll, did a phenomenal job of getting the tone right. Cause it's like, it's silly, but it's not silly. It's just funny. Like, just walking that line the right way always made us nervous of how is that going to play. And he just, from the beginning, totally got it and executed it, we think, perfectly.
I mean, even before that, so our exec at Hallmark is Laura Gaines, and she is just so smart and so, she just got it right away. And it kind of put us, we just knew that it was going to be great. Based on our conversations with her. And then at each step, like we met Mike and then Kim, the producer, and we were like, this is in good hands. This is in really good hands. And then once they casted Paul and Amy, we were like, this is amazing. And then when we actually saw them, we're like, oh my goodness, this is beyond, like, cause it's them. And
the whole thing lives or dies on their chemistry.
And on their shoulders. And they just like, you couldn't ask for better casting.
So speaking of reoccurring characters, I just hope that the crazy lady in the apartment building with the gun comes back. I mean, please tell me.
So that's based on a real story. A lot of stuff is based on a real story. I lived in Greenpoint, New York, Greenpoint, Brooklyn, New York. And I had this very old, she was our landlord. She lived underneath us and she's very old and Polish American, and she always wore like a muumuu nighty.
Yeah.
And I swear, like, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I came home and there's like some kids riding their bikes down the street, just being a little wild. And I jokingly said, oh, careful with these ruffians. Are you going to be okay? And she goes, don't you worry about me. And she lifted in her, like, where she had her tissues, she lifted in her pocket like a tiny little pistol. And I was just like, ugh. It just like froze
in amongst her dirty tissues.
There was like tissues. It was like a house coat. It was like the weirdest moment. And I just like, I in my mind, I was like, this is the most amazing thing, but I'm actually scared because this woman has a gun and she does not have good vision. Like, she does not.
Right. That's what I was going to ask. Was she also legally blind?
I don't know if she was legally blind, but she did not have good vision at all. Because I lived with two other guys and we looked very different, but she could not. She thought we were all this, like, couldn't differentiate who was who.
She just thought you were a very busy person. Like,
wow. Yeah, we were very busy, always coming and going.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little. We've been obviously talking about it, the movie and stuff, but tell us a little bit from what we read. This was originally written as a TV pilot for like an hour long. How did it go from what you originally had conceived and were out trying to sell to Hallmark picking it up and then turning it into this 2-hour movie of the week?
So kind of to back it up just a hair, in 2016, right when our daughter was born, I had this moment where I was like, I need to get outside of Hollywood because I'm losing my mind. So I actually went to PI school. Enrolled and I went to PI school and I was the only non-law enforcement person there. And so we had this, I came back to Margo, I was like, you don't understand, there's something here. And so
as he's trying to do a not Hollywood thing, we're like, so sorry, this is now becoming a Hollywood thing.
Like the first day we went around the classroom and it's like, My name is Mike. I work for the Ventura County Sheriff's Department. My name is Bill. I'm a retired LAPD. And then there's a couple like, my name's Dave. I work for a government agency, like full stop. And I'm literally just sitting there eating Funyuns because it's the first time away.
She was like newborn, like she was young, just less than one.
The only time I've been away from home. So I would just go to 7-Eleven. I'd get every type of snack I could. And I was just stuffing my face. And I'm like, my name is Joel. I'm a comedy writer. And this is the coolest thing I've ever done. And so we wrote an hour long procedural mm-hmm. about it. And it was like end of 2019. We worked with The Blacklist.
Yeah. So The Blacklist were our first producers on it. So we did like kind of a round of network pitches with them. Yeah, it was 2019.
And for all the people that don't know Blacklist, it's run by Franklin Leonard, and he's kind of like this wonderful tastemaker that finds unproduced scripts and creates an annual list for feature films. And this was their first kind of television jaunt, if mm-hmm. you will. And so we did that. It was a little late in the season. People liked it, but nothing happened. Yeah. So we were like, great, we'll put it on the back burner. We'll do some other things. Margo and I, we optioned some books, some mystery book series. We had a meeting with Laura Gaines, and we were like, we pitched her these book series that we optioned, and we also mentioned the cases, and I think we might have.
I think we used it as a sample.
Like yeah. a sample is like, see, we can write, and she's like, the book series are not for us. One involved a cat. But
like, the Sydney book series, I still think there's something there. We'll circle back to that. Yeah.
The book series.
Yeah.
But what we'd love the cases. What are you doing with it? And would you be interested in turning it into a feature for us? And without thinking about it, we were both like, absolutely, absolutely. And so,
yeah. So I mean, it was honestly the kind of Laura's vision of this could be a great fit for Hallmark. So that was something that we hadn't quite thought of, and it really I think you know. It's a bit of a tricky sell in the sense of hour longs every week, but the kind of mystery movie wheel of recurring movies and with these characters, you want to hang out with them. You want to come back. There's always a mystery to be had in their orbit. So we're like, this is kind of the right speed and also gives it the breath to hang out in their relationship and let that live. I think on a CBS, on a more procedural, you lose some of that charm that kind of the Hallmark audience, I think you get to have more fun there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Birdie and Amy or Birdie / Amy and Alden / Paul, they really have a great working chemistry. So obviously they made these characters really great, but they wouldn't be so great without the dialogue. And it's really comparable to real life couples. Like, I'm like, babe, and like, did you take your probiotic? And like, all these things are so, even I was telling Eric, even the set was relatable. One night table had a different lamp than the other. It was just like, just mismatched, funny. So are you pulling your couple dialogue from your own day-to-day banter, or how does that happen?
Oh, I'm sure we are. We love to play a game with our friends called Stir the Pot, where what you can kind of like, and this is with like close couple friends, but like we've got some good couple friends, and you can tell where their buttons are. And it's like, it's not the equivalent of like take out the garbage, but it's like, you know, I'm right about this. No, I'm right about this. And we're like, ooh, let's see how this plays out. And so then we like to kind of make fun of them.
I don't like to do that. I'm very confident I don't do that to other people.
You never do that.
I think like, yeah, I mean, we're partners, and like, we write together, we live together, it comes out all the time. And because we wrote this with a hour-long procedural in mind, we had to then plan out multiple seasons. And so we have ideas for future ones, and they all draw from, or at least to varying degrees, things that actually happened in our marriage, in real life, small things, big things. The probiotic is a real big issue in the house. And a lot of people have commented on how authentic that is, because these are all like, you know, marriage can be a little messy sometimes, you know? And I think that that's what I really love about Paul and Amy is they really capture the essence of what it's like to live with somebody. And it happens every day in our daily life.
And even like, again, they had such a short window to get on board. And then suddenly they're filming this movie and they had this like intimacy and this comfort with each other. That is like, my hat is off to them. Cause I don't know how you show up and you're just strangers and you're kind of going through the motions and you would sniff that out. And they just had a real ease about them. That was such a gift, I think, to their chemistry.
But to answer your question, yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah. They really did have a great chemistry. It was awesome.
Well, when we did our review, what was funny was Sydney had just, she brought up how she had just had the probiotic conversation with her husband, like whatever, the day before.
At the grocery store, yeah. We have to get one.
And yep, then, gut health is very important, yeah. Guys. Very important.
We can have a 10-minute conversation about granola. And it's like, is this our life now? Like, yeah, you know what? It totally is because the quality of granola matters.
Yeah.
It's a real situation.
Yeah. Yeah, we gotta get on the same page.
Right. And something else that I mentioned to Eric when we were doing our review was I thought it was really funny how, and now it makes sense because of what you just said before, but that Alden was always eating. He was always like during the stakeout, like he's just talking about food. He's like pizza, Chinese, you know what he's. So is that also where that came from?
I mean, class? When the cats are away, the mice will eat complex carbs, you know, like when, especially at that time when I was taking those classes, like it was the only time I had to myself. And by Lord, I am going to eat my weight in sugar, if that's possible. I'm a little bit better now, but like, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I loved that. It was really cute. Endearing.
All right. So let's talk a little bit. You said you had written it for, you know, originally CBS or ABC, like whatever regular network, but not for Hallmark. And in this movie, one of the things we had mentioned was at the crux of the mystery is a secret gay couple where the husband is essentially in an open marriage. And that is about as anti-Hallmark as it can be. And you know, it was when it first happened, it just watch it, play it out. But then as I thought about it, I'm like, just wow, how revolutionary this is. Because Hallmark has definitely gotten loosened up and you know had more diversity. And but that is really, really pushing it. So when you had that in the script, did you get feedback from the network saying like, like was this a battle you had or was it just run with it?
I'm very proud that
was never an issue.
Yeah, it was never an issue, and I'm very proud that that's in there without hanging to like having to wave a big flag about it. Also, and the core of that was we wanted Alden and Birdie to kind of see the world of secrets and marriage as they go about their investigation. So it's reflecting back to them and kind of processing what their marriage means to them and how they want their marriage to be. So we thought, Let's play something unconventional. Let's talk about people who you'd think that maybe this should be. It's not a secret. Turns out they're totally comfortable with each other. What is that like? And for them to go, oh, okay, wait a minute.
And to look at another couple who are painfully honest with each other, where Birdie and Alden keep secrets from one another, at least at the beginning of the movie. And I think it was really what we wanted to show was that marriage can mean different things to different people, but honesty is kind of the like through line throughout it all. And that honesty is really what makes it successful. And to Hallmark's credit, we didn't get any pushback. I don't even know if we really discussed it with them. It was just kind of like, great, let's move on. I mean, the big thing was how Tim died was we had to be a little bit delicate with. Because
we were in a PG-13, you know, PG world. Yeah.
And so we had to like really, actually, let me stand corrected and I apologize if I'm going on a tangent. It was how Alden almost died at the
yes,
end.
Yes, yes. That was our biggest kind of Hallmark juggle of appeasing. Because originally Paula was also going to try and hang Alden. And so the rope around the neck was just what a bridge.
It was way too graphic. And so we had to, but it was also really fun because I liked the idea of her trying to find poison with what Alden and Bernie have at home.
So we joke about that all the time.
It ended up being a really great, I think it worked better than what we had originally. And our experience, especially with Laura, was like whenever she'd have like the note, it would be really smart and it would make us work really, not work hard, but it ended up being way better than what we originally had.
Yes, I would say killing with a Tide Pod is definitely funnier than
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so what's interesting about that too was it didn't even, you're talking about how it was just sort of part of the story, that it didn't even sink into me the significance until I was reflecting on the movie. So it wasn't like watching it and I was like, a gasp, oh my gosh, you know, open marriage. It all flowed and it all made sense. It just was not very Hallmarky, like I said, in reflection. So, but I agree. And as you mentioned it too, it is a very good symbol of how a very open, forget the open relationship, but just open communication versus the other, Alden and Birdie.
Go ahead. Well, I want to talk with you guys about the poker playing because I heard in your there's some questions about the poker playing and some concerns.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Yeah. So, you know, our intention was not that Birdie's a poker addict or a gambling addict. So it was not to go that far. But just that, and we did have a scene where she does confess to him, I've been doing this. And he says, oh, I already knew that. and as you had actually mentioned in your review, like the editors, I think there's a handful of scenes that did not make it into the final cut. And that I think got taken away. That was a kind of end moment on the couch. But what we did get was mobster ham at the end. And you know what? I would take the mobster ham scene all day
100%
long.
100% agree. We love the monster ham.
And I think with Birdie's poker playing, it really reflects is someone who, Birdie is a lawyer by trade, but that's not who she is, right? Like, I think that, and so many people in life kind of follow paths because that's what they're told to, or that's what they feel is necessary, not what they have in her heart. And I think Birdie, what we really wanted to show with her playing poker is that she's a bit of a risk taker, that there's a lot of depth to her, and that there is this drive of excitement that is ingrained into who she is. I mean, that's why she married Alden. And so the poker playing, what that really represents is her desire, not represents, but like she wants to have more fun. Like doing law is not as exciting.
I think the law was, this is great to hear from you because I hadn't really thought of it that way. I'm glad you put that much thought into it. The law is, and working with her mom, and Sydney, I heard you, I want to go into your flower store with your mom. That's it. That's all the sidebar I want to hear about.
That's another Hallmark thing.
working with her mom was the thing she should do and the thing she was supposed to do. And I'm always really interested in the things we're not supposed to do. And I always thought, we always joke how Birdie's kind of more bro-y than Alden. Like her and Kyle have this like kind of thing. And there's a piece of her that's like that competitive. It's like she can hang with the dudes. She wants to get in there and mix it up a little bit. And I think then it's like Amy brought that to the table in such a great way. And that's something we're looking forward to kind of getting more into. I think there was more story to be had there that we just have the same, you know, it's 96 minutes or whatever our time length was.
I also would like to add that is part, I listened to your podcast about the 10 things that you would like to see in Hallmark movies. And I believe that was one of them where you didn't want the wife to be the
strong woman.
Yeah. You didn't want the wife to be the nosy neighbor. So we literally made the husband a bit of a nosy neighbor where the wife was a little bit more of the opposite. And we had done that originally just because we wanted to see that, not because of your suggestion. Though it was helpful. Thanks.
We'll take the credit, but I guess it's a question I had later or in the comments too, is one of the things we wanted was comedic. So you took two of the things that we wanted to see this year. You guys got to check off.
We're just here to serve, guys. Just here to serve.
We appreciate. But yeah, we do love the stronger woman or the I guess I don't want to say the straighter, but you know, the woman who's not as you said, the nosy one out there and sort of fumbling around. The thing about it that's funny too is how Alden thought he was so smooth and so good, but he was definitely stripped, you know, his mustache and Manny pizza hat wasn't fooling anyone.
That definitely is not based on anything in real life. I always totally.
So,
oh my gosh.
But so hopping back into it. So one of the things I read was Paul Campbell in an interview had said it's the best script he's read at Hallmark. So that has to make you feel good, especially considering he's written scripts for Hallmark. And so he, you know, he put out his Instagram, I wanna, you know, start a petition that there better be more. And we are definitely on board that there needs to be, we can't have any more mysteries hanging on cliffhangers. But how does that, like, just as writers, to have that, you know, praise of the best script he's ever read at Hallmark?
It's huge. I mean, that's just so heartwarming. It's, you know, writers are like, we're so quick to dismiss stuff too. So, I mean, the fact that there's a petition, I love that it's on change.org, you know, next to save the oceans more places is like, yes. But also, I mean, look, we'd love to do more. We don't know where that stands at the moment. We love that. My bar is always like, I hope it's out there and it's not horrifying. Like, please don't let it suck. So you know what? People like it. I'm thrilled.
It was such a, from who made that comment, it was just like such an honor. I almost didn't believe it. I thought he was being kind of like, I was like, okay, that's enough. Like, don't be, we get it. But like, as writers, it's very difficult to like accept praise because we see the flaws in all of our work, but it was just like, it's tremendously sweet of him.
Okay, I'm switching back to the movie here. So I really liked, you know, how you guys discussed the divorce papers in the movie. Like, it's not a big deal. You didn't really drag it on. Like, in most Hallmark movies, if something like that comes up, it'd be talked about for the next 20 to 30 minutes of the movie. And then it'd set the characters back and you'd be sitting there and you're like, okay, come on. Like, nobody's communicating. Let's just get over it. Why did you decide to kind of make it a little bit more of a minor thing that it was seemingly more easier for both of the characters to overcome?
That's a great question. I mean, the rom-com genre wouldn't work if people had real communication skills, right? If it's like, I like you, you like me, should we go out? And it's like, no, we're going to spend an hour and a half deciding that. And antics that ensue. Why did we not make it?
To me, we hadn't discussed this. This is a really good question. Where I feel is that it's all about secrets we keep from ourselves, secrets we keep from our partners. And this was like a really big secret. And sometimes in life, the biggest secrets we don't discuss, right? Like when it's a really big, serious thing, we don't want to talk about it. We stuff it away. And for Alden, you know, I think we know why kind of Birdie had this drawn up. It was out of anger, but it was also like things had not been working well. And for Alden, he didn't want to bring it up because that would make it real. And then he would have to deal with it because Alden doesn't want to have to deal with the things in front of him. And especially if it's a really big, like life altering tectonic shift type of a secret, we like to shove those and put them away. And I think that's really why. And to me, it's almost, it's bigger if we don't talk about it, right? It makes it more of a substantial issue in their marriage if we don't talk about it. Because in marriages, we often put the big issues aside.
Mm-hmm. But it definitely, you know, our goal was it's the undercurrent of everything. Like Alden and the PI class is their marriage hanging by a thread of like when she's got that in her back pocket the whole time, everything he does is being weighed against that to a certain degree of like, oh my God, this guy, like he's going to become a private investigator. Do I want to be married to him? And everything like it doesn't get a lot of screen time, but I actually think it's kind of the subtext hanging between them the whole time. But we also wanted very early in the investigation, because so many of these types of shows, I think it was Heart to Heart, we like tried to go back and watch, was like, you know, it's kind of like the silly wife that he was like hiding, like lying to the whole time. And the wife is like, honey, what are you doing? like we had dinner with the Smiths. And we didn't want her to be the wife on the side of the investigation also. So we wanted to team them up as kind of, I think by act two, they're in this thing together. And so, sorry, I got off topic, but I just think it still was the underpinnings of the kind of the tension and can they make this work slash their marriage.
And it also to Alden, it kind of explained a little bit of his obsession with this case. Because in his mind, if he can solve this, if he can solve this case, he can save his marriage. And mm-hmm. so that to me was a little bit of the like neurotic, obsessive, compulsive with this case. And to Birdie, I think the not talking about the divorce papers was because she really didn't know. Like she was literally on the fence, but she works in the legal field. So it was a very like, well, this is like her job. This is what the responsible thing would be to do as one,
yeah, could
one
possibly
option.
Be married to him now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like if the responsible thing would be to have this option here on the table, even though that might not be what she really wants, but that's what she feels she really should be doing.
That's mm-hmm. awesome. And I think, yeah. you know, as Sydney said, you didn't drag it on. You, the way you wrapped it up just succinctly with the communication of Alden, I'm not giving up on you or whatever. And then moving on, like,
yeah.
So, right. There's all,
so nice.
There's all that
refreshing.
Heavy subtext. Of everything, but then just like whether now he's just emotionally that's good to cram it, you know, cram it away, like there, as you said, you got all that heavy stuff underneath the surface. But it was nice that it was a way to just boom, take it, then move on, and let's get on to the mystery and let's get on to the hijinks.
And that was really Alden's arc, was he had to come into his own and kind of take some ownership and kind of become a bit more of a man in that sense and like kind of grow up. And he was kind of hanging in a Peter Pan zone earlier. And like the decision of I'm not giving up on us was like really, sorry, one of the first times he's putting his feet down and saying, this is how it's going to be. And you know, our goal was like, I hope that doesn't come off creepy, but like, he's like, nope, we are together. This is how it's going to go. And I think she needed to see that in him too. So it really kind of then creates this new path for them going forward.
And I think also like in marriages, we never argue about the thing that we're that is bothering us. It's like, oh, you left the dishes messy. Mm-hmm. It's never about the actual dishes. It's about the like the resentment or the thing that's like we want to talk about, but we don't. So it's, oh, you leave your socks on, there's a wet towel on the floor, whatever it is, that's what we argue about. And that's marriage, and we really wanted that to come through with these two.
Awesome. All right, so you'd mentioned before our podcast where we did the 10 things we want to see, and I said how we wanted to have that comedic. I just want to know a little bit about how you structure a comedic mystery, because we do have, as you said, you went through and you tried watching a bunch of other ones. You don't really have a lot out there that fit what you guys did. So do you write the mystery and sort of write the classic mystery and then look for all the moments of humor? Or is it sort of, hey, I've got this really funny thing, let's put that and figure out how that works into a mystery?
It's kind of both, right? So like what really adds the comedy, I think, is the characters, is who Alden is and also who Birdie is. Because I've read like the comments, people are like, oh, Alden's so funny, but it's a really traditional straight man, funny man. And they were a comedic duo. It would not work if Amy was not Amy and Birdie was not Birdie. It would just be a really goofy dude. And so they have to bounce off each other. And for the mystery, listen, you have your idea of a mystery, and that's kind of like what you...
That's your framework.
That's your framework. It changes as things go around, and then you have funny ideas that come out, like the mobster ham. Like we wanted to add these kind of like loose ends, and like how great would it be if a mobster who owned a deli, what would they do? They'd give a ham, and so it would be mobster ham. And so you get to pepper these things in, and so the characters really dictate the humor and the pacing of it, and then you just have fun with it. And then
yeah,
you just...
the what is always the same. It's the how that you change and how they go about doing it. And as you said, it's like for me, the moments where it really came alive were, it's like Paul and Amy in the cars, Alden and Birdie, they're doing the like winking of like, I get it.
Right.
You know? And we wrote the winks in, we wrote that back, but they brought something else to that when they play off of each other. And also when any moments when Amy got a couple of jokes in or Birdie got just a couple and she kind of veered from the straight man, is there was like a real spark there. Because there's something they bring out of each other that was really cool. So it's like, yeah, the what is always, it's kind of straight up mystery, but the what do they bring to the table and what do each of them bring to the table? The Alden kind of seeing things from a real wild mind kind of point of view, and Amy really, and Birdie just seeing things from, you know, what's the path of least resistance? What's the logical thing here? And she's a lawyer. She knows crime. She knows how things get there. So I think they both bring their strengths to the table too.
All right. So now I'm going to really put you in the spot. If you have to pick your one favorite, either line or little short scene, what's each of yours favorite line or scene of the movie?
Mine is when Paula asks him if he does this, wants to do this the easy way or the hard way. And he's like, I'm a 38-year-old private investigator in training. I don't do anything the easy way. That is essentially me in a nutshell. Like I just identified with that so much. And that to me is still, I also love the look at this mustard line when he's in the refrigerator. But yeah,
fun with the mustard too.
I don't do anything the hard way.
I think it was, for me, it was a couple of the, I think when we were writing it, the thing I kept laughing about was the, like, he's trying out a couple of fonts on his business card. I think Joel came up with that one. I feel like I laughed about that one for like a couple of days.
Officer Air Quotes is also
pretty, is also just,
that was a late ad. That was not in the original script. That's what I think we did in one of the rewrites. No,
we had it in the first scene, and then it was in the rewrite. We brought him back for the brick through the window, yeah. And we were like, "Yeah, bring this guy back."
Officer Air Quotes.
But I also love when they do the, like, well, we're not investigating this. That actually, I forget if that's actually in the script or I don't know. That just really seals the crux of the movie for me. So there's a couple of things that we laughed out loud multiple times the first cut we saw, which is like, we don't laugh at our own stuff ever.
You laugh when you're writing it?
They really got us. So there's a couple of those lines that worked.
Do you ever laugh when you're actually writing it?
Oh yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Constantly. That's why it's fun. You laugh.
So I know it was a very hard question, which you guys actually answered much easier than I was expecting to, because I don't know if I could come up with mine, but I still love the one. It's like, you want to get Chinese? No Chinese. I'm still mad at you. So we can do pizza. I thought that one, that was a fantastic,
we have a running list of Chinese restaurant pun names,
or just general restaurant, like
pun
name restaurants that we really like, and so that kind
we were trying to squeeze that in, and it didn't quite make the cut, but that's always a secret mission if we can squeeze those in.
But yeah, we also like really got a good laugh out of the mustard in the fridge, so.
Yeah, that like whole scene with the apartment building, because my family is from Western Massachusetts. So every time I spent like a ton of time back there growing up, but every time I go back, now we have Dunkin' Donuts out here, but every time I go back, I'd be like, oh, I need Dunkin' Donuts. And I'd stop. And the lady on the intercom was just so like, yeah, what do you want? Basically not no time. So like even the beginning when they go to the building and he's like, I've got a pizza, and the lady's like, that's not my problem.
Not my problem. You know?
It was just so also good accent, because most of these, like, the accent sucks.
Austin is a tough one to really nail down.
And for what are probably 90% Canadians, they did a great job.
Yeah. The whole apartment building scene was just hilarious. Oh, like, good. You must have laughed a lot while you were writing that one.
Yeah. It was really fun. Funny story. I used to work at Dunkin' Donuts when I was in high school.
Okay.
I had someone throw a munchkin at me because I got their order wrong. And
munchkins.
Yell at you through the intercom. They're like, I want a large half cap, two sugar, vanilla iced coffee. I want a medium. And you're like,
that's a lot.
You just guess. That's why they mess up your order, because you're just like, want a medium hot coffee, three sugars, two milks. I want a large hot coffee, two sugars, one. And so you're just standing there. You're just like, all right, I'll just. Here we go. Then I totally messed it up and somebody threw a munchkin at me. But that's neither here nor there.
Also, like, what is it with the robots?
I collect vintage robots. I love
okay. Vintage
robots. We love a good vintage robot.
This is one of them.
Hello.
yeah, I've always found them to be super cool and super interesting. And so, you know, just we were trying to find a way that he got out of the garage and it just presented itself.
Joel will go to great lengths to hunt down a pretty good vintage robot as well. So there's more to be had there. There's a lot of story in
sketchy robots and some sketchy under the bridge type of deal. So
oh wow, maybe that'll be in the next one. Alden goes to get a robot under a bridge.
that was a scene. Yeah, that we do love something like that.
Oh, I'm looking for that. Are there any other Hallmark? Have you watched any of the other Hallmark mysteries on the channel? Are there any that you actually maybe like? Or
I like the crossword one. I don't know them all by name. Okay. We're very new to this, and so we had when they were like we'd like to turn this into a Hallmark movie, we both simultaneously had to like familiarize ourselves with the Hallmark world while we were writing it in a very short amount of time. So some of the like proper names, I like the crossword one. Yeah. I like the Curious Cater because I like baking things. And so
I liked the Murder She Baked series as well. As we started, no shortage of great baking mysteries, and the Venn diagram just crosses right over. Great stuff.
I was glad to see that Alden and Birdie, neither of them baked, though. I said that to Eric in our movie. I was like, I'm tired of seeing the like lady baker or whatever.
I think it honestly like kind of helped that we weren't super familiar with the Hallmark world, because then we didn't try to play like because we kind of originally had this as a network thing. It was really. It worked in our advantage that I didn't know that baking, people who baked that did mysteries was a thing, but apparently it is, but it was never something that had like occurred to us. So
yeah.
All right. So the last question is getting away from, you know, the movie specifically, but so we have a lot of people out there who have, you know, either are working on scripts themselves, amateur writers. What advice would you give as far as how to craft a mystery and then how to go ahead and sell it to Hallmark? Sounds like getting on this blacklist is the way to go, but so what would some advice would you give to a, you know, a wannabe writer?
Find a different career. No,
you can do anything.
Become a baker.
But listen, I've been writing since I was 20. I am much older than that now without getting into specifics. We've been writing, we moved to LA 14 years ago, 12 years ago, 12. Writing consistently. And it is all about consistency. Just keep doing, don't stop. I think there's this like misunderstanding that like you will get your big break. Like here's the script and the president of Hollywood calls and says, we're going to do, that doesn't happen.
We waited. We really had expected the president of Hollywood to call us.
There are,
she did not.
There are plenty, especially now with Zoom, there's plenty of opportunities, plenty of classes and places that can help you get your script. But it's just, I've written, I don't know how many, 20 scripts. Margo's written a bunch. It's never the ones that you think are going to like be successful. Not that it doesn't deserve it, but like I've written things that I'm just like, this is the one, and it's gonna make me and this and then
nobody cares.
And then one that we wrote just for fun that we're like, we just want to do this together. It was their second one that we wrote together.
This one, yeah.
Yeah, and so we were, you know, it's such a difficult industry because it's persistency, it's time, it's talent. Maybe if your last name is Coppola, that could help. But for the rest of us that don't have those like big time connections, it's just being persistent.
Yeah. And I would say also, it's the like, don't chase the market. It's like, write the thing only you can write. Because having something that reflects you is actually the better way in, is actually like the calling card. Don't write something you think somebody else is gonna like. I'm gonna write towards Hallmark because the impression we get is Hallmark kind of is moving on, you know, the traditional Hallmark is actually being bought elsewhere. Hallmark is actually like shifting who they are also, which is so cool and just very refreshing. So, you know, it's like, what is your story to tell? How do you put you on the page? And then mysteries are their own thing. And what we end up doing a lot of is kind of doing a pass and then actually do the whole thing backwards from the, like the killer's point of view of like, how does this work, and doing like the plausibility test. So it's like, it has to hold water on the mystery, but then it's like, why do we care? What makes it interesting? And the why do we care is really what makes you care about it. And if that comes out on the page, if you can get your kind of soul on the page, the mystery will solve itself.
And I would also add, don't write to make money or to be successful, because that is not a recipe. You write because you have to write because you have to, because it's a story that you have to tell. And this for us was a story that we had to tell. It was very close and personal. And we are very, very, very fortunate that Hallmark thought it was worthy of putting on screen. And if you, you know, we know a lot of writers that just write for the love of it. And that's why we write. And that ultimately has to be the reason you tell a story, is because you feel an inherent need that the story exists within you and you have to share it. You can teach structure, you can teach pacing, but really what it boils down to is this story so personal to you or so part of you that you have to tell it? And that to me is how you become successful, whether or not somebody else watches it or not.
So is the, what you are out there selling, is it an actual like script where it has like all the different dialogue, or is it more like a synopsis type of this is what the story is?
Yeah, it depends. If you're breaking in, you're going to need the whole script. For us, this was helpful having at least the pilot written. So somebody really got the tone and the characters. I mean, we have other projects that we're out with. Some are pitches, some are entire scripts. It kind of depends on the project and the way you're going with it and kind of what way you're choosing to go in.
And then just for curiosity, like how long is how many pages is a Hallmark script for this movie?
103-ish, I think, is the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So it's technically, Hallmark is a little different. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. So like movies are three acts. A network kind of show like Monk is six acts. But Hallmark does this really interesting thing where it's nine acts. So you can count out the kind of commercial breaks. There are eight or nine different ones. So it's a little bit different than like, say, a movie in a movie theater, but it's also very different from a TV show. And so to write a Hallmark movie, it's a little bit different than writing for anything else. They call movie of the weeks, which is a kind of older term. But it's a really fun exercise because you have there's a real rhythm and pacing to it, which you watch enough, you can kind of figure out like, oh, this is the false thing where this happens, or he might get arrested, but that's not the guy or whatever. So there's this like wonderful nine act structure that exists almost exclusively in the Hallmark world, Hallmark and some other
Lifetime. Yeah.
Well, I think, like I said, we have a lot of people who keep telling us, oh, I have this wonderful mystery. Hallmark should do it. And I'm like, Do it.
Write it.
Why not?
Margo's dad has
My 84-year-old father's writing a Hallmark Christmas movie. And awesome. I try and help him, but he's just kind of in his own zone. I've gotten him the books, but he keeps, like, we keep talking about the act outs and commercial breaks, and you know, he's like, I got a Hallmark Christmas movie in me. I'm like, let's do it, dad.
Sure. Awesome. But it's fun. It's so fun because Hallmark viewers especially have this passion that doesn't exist. It like when they announced the like production of this movie, and even after the movie aired, I scrolled through Twitter, because what I do is I try to find people who hate things. Because that's just like me as a writer, like that voice.
Like, this will be fun. Yeah.
And it was so hard to find. Everyone was so kind and nice. That does not exist anywhere else. And so there are these passionate viewers that is incredible to be part of, that also have really wonderful ideas. Like, do it, write it. Write it because you want to try to see if you can write it from beginning to end. It's hard. It's very hard. But just do it. And then
I take my hat off to anybody who kind of goes about their daily life and then carves out time to do that strange creative thing and like talk to invisible people in your head and put them on the page. Because life is full. There's enough to do. Dishes need to be done. Kids need to be fed. And you're like, no, mommy needs a moment to go hang out with invisible people. I swear this is valuable. And like the people around you getting that and supporting that and carving that time and getting something from A to Z is no small feat. So I think that's always a valuable mental place to go.
All right. Well, a lot of people think we are actually Hallmark, and that's part of the conversations. Weird, yeah. They'll send us in our DMs.
Oh, will they really?
Yeah.
And we have our Mystery 101 fans. A lot of them will personally get mad at us. And we just had one as we're doing this mystery bracket to figure out the best. One person said, shame on you to us for keeping the episode 8 from them. And we're like, I don't know what we can do.
we're literally a podcast.
So yeah, I think Hallmark Mysteries and More is close enough to the Hallmark movies and mysteries that people just get it confused in a good way often. But sometimes, yeah, we do get some people.
But isn't that incredible? Like there's like all these people demanding, they want it's more, they want man, more. It's so like, good. Yeah, that a bummer. Some lady said, shame on you. But also like, as far as the internet goes, that's like a pretty like,
yeah.
Oh, yes. It's Hallmark world. So yes, shame on you.
Like, okay.
It doesn't get much more colorful than.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for giving us some time. It was really interesting to hear your story and how this wonderful mystery came to be.
And we can't wait for the next one. And we know there'll be a next one because they can't do that to us.
Right. So unless you want a shame on you tweet there, then you got to make sure Hallmark.
We would love for that to happen.
All right.
Thank you guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, Sydney, that was super interesting.
Super interesting. I really enjoy their perspective and I am looking forward to hearing more of their writing in more Hallmark movies.
I agree. We better be getting more of the cases in Mystery Lane.
We better.
All right. So while we're in this writing mood, what we've got coming up next week is, while we had fresh new writers, next time we're going to have one of the all-time greats of John Christian Plummer talking to us about Mystery 101, Curious Cater, and some of his other inspirations, some
about
British
upcoming
things
projects. From, yeah.
Yes. So that's going to be another exciting one. We're definitely getting our background of what goes into a mystery taken care of with these interviews.
Yeah, super fun. He was so nice to talk to, and I'm really excited for that.
All right. Well, everyone, hope you liked this one. I hope you really are enjoying where we're going with all this mystery. All Mysteries All the Time, the only podcast that focuses solely on Hallmark mysteries. Let us know what you think in our comments. Give us some stars if you're feeling like it. We'd greatly appreciate it.
Yes, we would. And if you're interested in more Hallmark mystery content, go ahead and give us a follow over at Hallmark Mysteries and More on Instagram, where we post super fun clips of mysteries and your favorite Hallmark mystery actors and even a little bit of Sleuther style.
Love the Sleuther style. And I tell you what, we just finished the Mystery Madness bracket and man, just like we thought, it came down to Mystery 101 and Signed, Sealed, Delivered. And those postables and those Mystery 101 fans are...
We're letting them duke it out right now.
Yes, we predicted it would come down to the two of them. They are definitely the most passionate, both in the voting and in our DMs behind the scenes.
In the comments, everything. Yes. I have never seen anything like that before. It is crazy and it's exciting.
It is. So what's your, by at this point, when everyone's listening, they'll know who won, but who do you think's going to win?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to say Signed, Sealed, Delivered.
I'm Mystery 101, but Signed, Sealed, Delivered twice now. I went to bed with them trailing only to wake up with them doing, so maybe they're late night owls and do late voting.
I think it's what they go to bed really early and then they're up really early. It's like you're not up yet. There must be like all on the East Coast or something.
That could very well be. So, okay. All right. Well, a lot of fun. Until next time, we'll see you later, Sydney.
Until then, bye, Eric.